Okay, so good morning, everyone. Thank you. Thank you so much for that kind welcome. And Scott, thank you. Also, great haircut. That's what we call that, a proper operator's haircut in transit. I just wanted to say, first up, how humbled I am. I mean, I talk about not being from here. I'm a kid from Plymouth, right, in the UK. I still pinch myself when I realize that I'm A, living in New York, and B, running the transit system. And the point I'd just like to make right from the start is, and I was talking to someone about this just the other day, that our much maligned transit system, for all its faults, most cities, even with its faults, most cities would give their right arm for our subway and their left arm for our bus network. You know, the express lines are a thing of wonder to me. So there's a lot to do, but we are starting, I believe, from a good place. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget that. And the other thing I would just like to say by way of an opener, following on from the video, is most people most days get to where they need to go without incident. So, you know, I think we do need to put it into that perspective, because at the end of the day, most days we perform a minor miracle in moving 8 million people. But it's all about making things better, which is why I'm here today. So first up, a huge thank you to Tom and the RPA and the other sponsors for putting on this event. I'm humbled by both the size and the quality of this audience. I was outside just now greeting a few people, and again, I was humbled by the fact that we have so many wonderful people here today, people with real gravitas and people who really know what it takes to raise funds in this city, so more on that later. And certainly the political reaction yesterday and the board reaction, I think on the whole, the board reaction particularly was fantastic. And I would just like to do a shout out to my board member, Scott Reckler, and also Veronica. Veronica's here somewhere, Veronica Vanderpool, another one of my board members. Thank you. Thank you very much for that wonderful reaction at the board yesterday. And I think some very valid points were made. And Scott certainly just reinforced one, namely that we cannot be parochial about this. A number of the board members made the point that this is actually, this city and this transit system, actually its benefits spread much wider than just the city itself. So I think that point, Scott, was worth reinforcing, and thank you for doing that. So I will largely reprise what I said yesterday, but I will be embellishing it, and then, of course, we'll have the opportunity for panel comments. So when I took on this role 100 days ago, I did so knowing that this was, without question, right now, the toughest job in world transit. I like a challenge, and this is the daddy of the challenges, right? This is the daddy of transit systems, and I walked into this knowing that it would be a big job. My job is to effect the total modernization of New York City transit. So we're not talking about tweaking a few things here and there. It needs to be an all-out modernization from top to bottom of how we do things. It needs to be a modernization of the infrastructure that we use, the processes that we apply, and the prevailing culture to make sure that people feel valued while they're on our service. So I hope what I will talk about today will whet your appetite for what I believe is a bold, imaginative, and ambitious plan, and one that is right for its time. So the background to this plan, as Scott mentioned, is the state of emergency that Governor Cuomo, rightly in my opinion, declared back last summer. And if you recall, back to last summer, a series of high-profile events and complemented by a gradual but perceptible decline and definite decline, sustained decline in operating performance led to that declaration of emergency, of a state of emergency being made. And this was both on the subway and the buses. Something clearly had to be done. And from that plan, the Subway Action Plan was born. And the Subway Action Plan is working. I don't think you've seen the full effects of that yet, but a number of the indicators are definitely showing upward trends. And the fact that we're out there every night clearing drains, replacing block joints on track circuits, cleaning the track bed, getting rid of garbage, that absolutely will come good. The figures in some ways are stubbornly resistant, but everything tells me that we will get back to that acceptable level of reliability that the Subway Action Plan was designed to do. But the reason we put this plan together is because, to me, getting the subway back to an acceptable level of reliability is only half the job. we need to go beyond that. We could stop there, I guess. We could say, well, that's it. It's done. It's back to an acceptable level of reliability. Most days it works okay. That's nowhere near good enough. Now's the time to grasp the nettle. Now's the time to push on and grasp the opportunity to do what really needs to be done, which is to accelerate this modernization program, to deliver a modernization program, and to transform this system so that it's on a par with London, with Shanghai, with Beijing, with Paris, on a par with the best systems in the world. If they can have it, we can have it. But it, as Scott rightly said, will take time and it will take pain. This is a growing city. So notwithstanding recent softening in ridership, it's clear to anyone who uses the system, and I use it every day, that the subway is struggling to cope with record numbers, and our buses are struggling to get through ever more congested streets. And I believe, and just to reinforce what I said yesterday, our 50,000 employees at New York City Transit, my miracle workers, I call them, I think do perform miracles in keeping the machine going. It is difficult. Service reliability is nowhere near good enough. But every day we set out to move 8 million people, and most days we do achieve just that. But we need to find a way to substantially add capacity and to improve reliability. Because at the end of the day, riders are fed up, stakeholders are frustrated, and it's time for decisive action to truly transform our system, and for that, we need a plan. Well, that is it. This is that plan. This is the plan that will transform transit in this city. And the name was deliberately chosen. You notice the two words there, fast and forward. Fast because obviously we want to accelerate what we're doing. Forward because this is about taking this city and its transit system forward, and the two are inextricably linked. A world city needs a functioning transit system. So, as I said earlier, this needs to be a complete overhaul, not a tweak. We must aim way higher than just stabilizing what we have today. We must overhaul and transform our assets, the infrastructure, the non-sexy stuff, the drains, the pumps, the HVAC systems, but the equipments and assets we use. We must overhaul the processes and systems that so often hold us back and overhaul the bureaucracy that stifles what we do and stifles innovation. And we must transform our culture so that our employees feel more engaged and so that our customers feel valued while they're with us. And so to that end, we have embarked upon a rollout of a new transit organization, one that is built around a customer, It's built around what I call a customer-centric continuous improvement model. Running transit is like Groundhog Day. Every day you set out to do the same thing, but you should do it better than you did the day before, right? Imagine Bill Murray. Every day we're going back to the hotel and we're saying, damn it, we got that wrong. So we need to learn from what we do and do it better the next day. So we've got to get better at learning from our mistakes. I hate what I call own goals. I cringe when we do something and it was completely self-inflicted. It's embarrassing. We've got to get better at that. We've got to up our game. But we've also got to increasingly deliver on our promises. And I think one of the reasons the plan was met in some quarters with some skepticism, I understand that, and to a certain extent I accept that, is because we don't have a stellar reputation in delivering on our promises, and we need to improve upon that exponentially. So this plan addresses all of those needs. It also is anchored around the four things that I talked about the first day I got here on January the 16th, 2018, which is less than 100 working days ago. And so those were to transform the subway, to exponentially increase both the reliability and the capacity of our subway system. And for that, we're talking resignaling. That's the big transformative change. To reinvent and reimagine the bus network, so to arrest the depressing decline in ridership in recent years and to attract people back onto the bus system. But for that, we've got to take tangible actions. I want people back on the buses. To prioritize accessibility, speeding up the rollout of elevators, improving our accessor ride service, and improving the performance of the existing equipment out there. There's lots of things we can and should do right now to provide service to all New Yorkers, which is not only the right things to do, it is the ethical thing to do. and ultimately also to transform the culture at Transit so that our people feel more motivated, inspired, and well-led, not through coercion, not through a big stick. Lots of Transit have tried that. Beat the troops a bit harder. You've got to bring your people with us. I want them to know what's in this plan, know what's expected of them in this plan, know what's in it for them in this plan, because if we all pull together, we can and we will turn around New York City Transit. So what does this plan look like? So let's focus. It's heavily biased towards the first 5 years. In fact, even earlier than that, and I'll come on to that in just a second. So in the first 5 years, we can... And we will deliver on the following, and you can see the list up there. Fundamentally, a complete expedition, a speeding up of the state of a state-of-the-art signaling system on five additional lines, and I'm going to outline those for you in just a second. Over 650 new subway cars. So new subway cars, the two go hand in hand. New signals require trains to be compatible with that new signaling system. So we have a huge task ahead of us to not only bring in new trains, but to convert existing trains such that they're compatible with that signaling system. To make the system more accessible, we're going to more than double the rollout of elevators on our system. More than double, and I'll come back to that. Renovate stations, talked about CBTC, redesign the bus network in all five boroughs actually within 3 years, a huge task, and introduce a new fare payment system, which will finally wean us off Metro cards and get us onto a modern smart card system. So lots to do. And in the following 5 years, and more of the same, more rollout of CBTC signaling systems, more new buses, more new trains, more state of good repair work. So this is a huge, ambitious plan that will transform this system in record time. Nothing like this, I would suggest to you, has ever been done in such a short order and on a 24/7 system. So let's look at this in more detail. And talk about, first of all, CBTC. For those of you who don't know what that is, it stands for Communications-Based Train Control. So it's a modern signaling system that enables you to run more trains safely, closer together. So I said on my first day here that the most transformative thing that we can do for this system, certainly for the subway element of it, is to re-signal the subway. We have a traditional signaling system here. It's served us well. It's still safe. But it is incredibly limited in its capacity to move trains because, literally, a train cannot move until the train ahead of it has cleared a section of what we call a block of the railway ahead of it. And in a lot of cases, those blocks are very long. We've also, as a result of various accidents that have happened in the past, or one in particular, we've had to introduce additional signals that have further constrained the capacity of the railway. All that is swept aside when we bring in CBTC. So there are two huge benefits. You get reliability benefits because there's way less to go wrong. You can get rid of line-side signals. You can take out track circuits and insulated block joints. You don't need train stops. You don't need trip cots. You don't need all that stuff down the tunnels. It's progressively less reliable now because it's old, but also it's a very hostile environment down there. And you replace that with a system that that basically relies on the trains talking to each other. So the trains are equipped, and a train can move up literally safely right behind another train because the signaling system is based upon the trains talking to each other. So that's a massive step forward, both in terms of line capacity and in terms of reliability. But as has been noted by others, if we carry on re-signaling the way that we've been doing, at this rate, it's going to take at least 40, arguably 50 years, because the way we've been doing this to date has been linear, in other words, one line at a time. It's taken approximately 7 years per line, and it's been done in a very, very methodical and traditional and rather slow way. So that has to change. 40 years to change signaling in this city is unacceptable and untenable. So in putting this plan together, I challenged my team to look at this challenge afresh. And we've gone back to basically a blank sheet of paper in terms of principles. I've said to them, we should be looking at doing more than one line at once. So we're going to. We've got a Gantt chart that shows clear overlaps between the lines. And obviously, we apply some science so we don't do adjacent lines at the same time. I said to them, whatever happens, we must stop this temptation to customize everything. Because the more you customize what are proven off-the-shelf products, in other words, signaling systems that work perfectly well elsewhere, if we continue to insist, oh no, New York's different, we've got to do it differently, we will continue to add cost and risk and time. The only people who benefit are the contractors, because they go, that's no problem. We can absolutely make that change. Here's the bill. I don't want to go there, right? I'm sick of playing that game, so we're not going to do it. And so we're going to, go, by and large, go for proven off-the-shelf products. We're going to also cut, minimize the interfaces between contractors. Again, a little trap I think we've fallen into is that we've ended up letting projects where maybe there's a contractor doing the train conversions, someone else is doing the interlocking, someone else is doing the software, someone else is fitting the stuff in the tunnels. You're just asking for trouble. You are adding risk, you are adding complexity and uncertainty. Another principle, we've been progressively renovating the lines pretty much in order of age. So in other words, state of good repair. And I get that, it makes sense. But I'm asking for us to also look at capacity. So the Lexington line is a classic example. The Lex isn't actually that old, comparatively speaking. It's sort of 1960s signaling. So, you know, in the railway world, that's actually quite old. In the new work, in the New York world, that's state of the art. So I'm saying, though, we can't just look at state of good repair, right? We've also got to address capacity. So that's what we're going to do. And also that we should have a blank sheet of paper approach to how we go about doing the work, and we need to countenance and sell to the public the benefit, yes, it will be painful, but the benefit of way more weekend closures and overnight closures. Now, I will say we did look at full-on closures, but there are huge practical issues around completely shutting a line. Yeah, it's great, you get it maybe done in 8 months or something, but the city just couldn't cope with, say, the Lexington shutdown for that period of time. Now, the good news is we may be able to deliver this resignaling in even less time than that, because as you know, the governor initiated the Genius Challenge, and we are looking, actively looking, in parallel to doing this work, we're actively looking at the potential for different signaling systems, what's called ultra-wideband. Actually, I'll take that back. It's not a signaling system, but it's a huge part of the communications part of a CBTC system. If we can get ultra-wideband to work, you can actually get the tunnels equipped way quicker. So we are actively looking at that. We're actively looking at a way to get new cars more quickly, which would come CBTC equipped. But I don't want to put all my eggs in the new product basket. I absolutely want to push on now. Let's not blight ourselves in the hopes that some miracle panacea will be forthcoming. If it comes, fantastic. We'll immediately jump on it. But let's get on with doing what we know with using proven products. Okay, so let's cut to the chase. This is what we currently have. I hope you can see that back there. Around 900,000 daily riders are benefiting from CBTC, or they will be when we do the next line, which is the Line 7, the Flushing line, which will go live later this year. So far at the moment, we've got Canarsie and Flushing operating on CBTC. This is what we can do within 5 years if we pull together, if we've got the funding, if we've got the political backing. We can deliver this. Look at how much that line, that map has expanded. And this is consistent with the principles that I've talked about. We're talking about lines like the G. We're talking about lines like the F down at the bottom there. But we're also talking about what I call the big guns, not messing about, getting on with, tackling the 4, 5, and 6, the Lexington, talking about the 8th line over on the west side. These will not be easy, but these are where you get the real benefit, because these are the big movers, the heavy lifters. We need to do that. We believe that we can jump from 900,000 riders a day to 3 million riders a day in 5 years. I can tell you, as a transit professional, this is unprecedented, and there are people out there saying it can't be done. Well, we'll see about that. But in 10 years... In 10 years, in just 5 more years from that, now look at the map. That is 90% of the system covered. That is 5 million daily riders, and we carry 5.7 million riders on our subway network. So now look at how it's transformed. All that is left from doing those further lines, all that would be left would be the extremities, where typically either the signalling is actually pretty new and or the capacity demand is less. So we're not going to ignore them. We would then address those in the following five years. But that would mean that within that 10 years, the acceleration would have been conducted on an unprecedented scale. Now, this is not without risk, and it's not without difficulty. The critical path is cars. So we absolutely, you've got to get the tunnels equipped. You have to put up cabling in the tunnels. You have to get what are called balises or transponders put down on the track. We know what to do. It's been done elsewhere. I know just the kind of people who can help us to do that. But you also need to do other things. You've got to have the cars equipped to be able to use this new signalling system. And this is where it gets exponentially more difficult, because the New York subway is, notwithstanding my comments earlier about customization, it is actually a tough gig doing it here. On the one hand, we have a subway system that's fabulous. I love it as a railway professional because it's so flexible. There's so many ways that you can operate between lines that if you do get a failure, in other words, you get a train failure, there are so many, I call them get out of jail cards. You can just you can divert around routes where in Toronto you would be shut down because there's no diversionary route. In London, where you've typically got self-contained lines, you're screwed. You can't get around it. Here we've got express lines, we've got local lines, we've got alternate routes. It's fantastic. There's two downsides to that. Number one, that does tend to spread delay across the system. So if you've got a problem somewhere and you divert a bunch of trains onto another line, that's great. You keep the service moving, but there's now more trains than you were expecting on that line, so delays tend to spread. It's a price worth paying, I'd say. But it makes conversion of CBTC, introduction of CBTC, exponentially more difficult, because you've got to make sure that all the lines, all the cars that operate over that line are CBTC compatible. What you cannot have is unequipped cars and equipped cars operating on the same line. Why? Because the signaling system won't be able to see an unequipped car, and that is, of course, dangerous. So we have a huge task ahead of us to get all those cars converted. We've also got to upgrade power supplies and upgrade potentially yards in order to accommodate the additional trains that we'll be able to run. But our math says we can do it. We've already talked to some car manufacturers, and we believe that we can do what we need to do, which is over 3,500 cars in the first 5 years. So that's a huge task, and further 3,000 in the following 5 years. But the good news is also, I said I'd come back to what we can do in the shorter term. This is not all about having to wait 5 years. And I don't think that's acceptable, actually. I don't think it's acceptable for us to say to people out there, to New Yorkers, we'll fix it, you've got to wait 5 years. Absolutely not. We could do a whole bunch of things before then. And the good news is a lot of what we can do doesn't actually require more money, but it absolutely requires better management. And it absolutely requires will and focus. So one of the things that we're going to do straight away, in fact, it's already in hand, is introduce a new station management model to provide what are called group station managers. They oversee groups of stations to provide single point accountability at each of the subway stations. So they'll oversee a group of around 25 stations with a supporting team under them. At a stroke, that will give you a one-stop shop for us ultimately to be able to hold accountable for the performance of staff, so the customer service element of stations, but also the look and feel, the ambience of the stations. And I guarantee you that will be transformative. It'll stop all this finger-pointing. You know, I see things on stations that make me cringe. And at the moment, someone says, well, it was infrastructure, it was maintenance away. No, it was cleaning. No, it was elevators. In the future, I'm going to say, hey, GSM, why did I just see that on your station? I'm kind of qualified to say that. I was a group station manager back in 1993 and on the tube at King's Cross Station in 1995. So it's a system I know well. We introduced it also on the TTC. It will make a big difference. Other things we're going to do. You can see the list up there. I'm not going to read it out, but absolutely finish off the subway action plan. We're going to upgrade the PA, the public address, at all of our stations, including fitting it to those stations which, incredibly, in 2018, don't currently have it. It's kind of a basic to me, but we're going to get them done. We're going to have a sevenfold increase in CCTV, closed-circuit TV, for security purposes at stations. We're going to move to a proactive rather than a maintenance-reactive approach to stations. And also, fundamentally, in each of the five-year terms, we will upgrade 150 stations and major capital investment, such that over the 10-year program, 300 stations will have been exponentially improved, will have been transformed in terms of capital. Second priority, I talked about the four priorities. Second one is the bus network. I won't dwell on this too much because we launched the bus plan just the other day. But the buses, as I said, the key challenge is to turn around that network, to get people back riding our buses again. So in consultation with NYPD, in consultation with Department of Transport, or Transportation, we're going to make our existing bus lanes better enforced. We're going to add bus lanes. We're going to put more traffic signal prioritization equipment onto key intersections. We're going to open a new bus command center. We're going to increase the presence of on-street supervisors to stop once and for all bunching and gapping. People say to me sometimes, they said it to me in Toronto, it's impossible to eliminate short turns, in other words, where the vehicle gets turned back before its book location. It's impossible to eliminate bunching and gapping. Rubbish. That's defeatist, I say. In Toronto, we cut short turns by 90%. It just needs better management focus, and it just needs to be prioritized. In addition, we'll be enhancing the bus network. I gave you the statistics earlier. You can see there we're all about moving towards an all-electric fleet as long as the technology is proven, and we're trialing double-deckers on Staten Island right now. Let's go to the third priority, that of accessibility. Here again, we want to move ahead, fast forward. Why? Because it's the right thing to do. So I've already talked about how we're going to double the rate of installation of elevators. And we believe that within 5 years, just 5 years, we can get to a situation where you are no more than two stops away from an accessible station. So that might mean there's a gap of four in between, but if you think about that, you would still only be two stops away from an accessible station. You get it? Have I got that right? Yeah, four stops. Yeah, there you go. So what that means is a massive step forward, I believe, in terms of providing accessibility. But we're not going to stop at 36 infill stations. We believe that we can do more than 50 in the next 5 years and more than 130 in the following 5 years. So suddenly we're leaping from 118 stations to a very high percentage of the network covered and the remaining possible stations installed by 2034. So then finally we can look the accessibility community in the face, in the eyes, and say to them, we've given you what you rightly call for, which is a fully accessible network. Thank you. But again, here again, it's not all about the future. It's not all about new equipment, right? There's so much that we can and do, can and should do, and must do right now. Far too many elevators that are in service today aren't in service today. We must get better at maintaining our existing equipment. We must get better at communicating to customers when machines are out for, say, planned maintenance. There's so much that to do. I went on a ride-along with one of the advocacy groups, and I have to tell you, it was quite the eye-opener. I was embarrassed, and I was humbled by what I saw, actually. So we're not messing about. We're going to push all out to make this as accessible a system as it can be within the shortest possible time frame. Fourth equal priority, it relates to employees, because my strongly held view is you can only be world-class if you have an engaged, motivated, empowered workforce that you bring with you, that believe in the mission, that know what's in it for them, and that want to do a good job, not through coercion, but because they feel supported in what is often a tough gig. And I started as a frontline employee back on the tube in 1989 as a station foreman. So I know what it's like to wear a uniform and work shift work and be surrounded by angry customers when you're least able to actually do something about that which the customer is annoyed. So we're redesigning the organization to be more dynamic, to be less hierarchical. We're going to change the way that we manage our employees so that we differentiate between capability and conduct. Make a mistake, I make mistakes, we should coach you, we should have a word with you. Conduct's a different matter, but I actually believe that the vast majority of New York City Transit employees actually are good as gold, and I've been very impressed with the people that I've met. So we're absolutely going to focus on them. We're absolutely going to flatten the hierarchy so that we give people opportunities so that they can progress up through the grades, but we will not let the errant few off the hook. Because we want everyone to write up their game, my exec included, and between us, working with our union partners, we are going to transform this company. So it's a whole bunch of things we're going to do. Even little things, right, the things that we've used to great effect elsewhere. I'm not having my team meetings at 2 Broadway. Nope, we're going to go out into the field. We're going to go to lunchrooms, to garages, to divisions, to workshops. We will go out. We'll still have our meeting, but we'll walk the floor and we'll meet the troops. It's an incredibly powerful thing to do. We are going to change the way we reward and recognize people, and we're going to introduce what's called a new people group to truly take the people empowerment priority forward. Three key principles drive through my plan, or our plan, and they are the need to become more agile about how we do things and to be accountable and transparent in everything that we do. Because, as I said earlier, we don't have the best of reputations in terms of delivering on our promises. So we're overhauling processes. We're going to use the output of the board task forces on all of them, including procurement and including cost reduction. So we've all read the New York Times articles. We've all seen the horror stories about how much things cost. So we will be strengthening project controls, we will be improving technical specifications, improving our ability to estimate and expedite the design process. We must deliver on our promises. So that's key foundation number one. Number two, again, it's not an initiative, it has to go through this this whole plan. It's that of safety and security. And here, of all places, we can never relax our guard. So we must continue to find better ways to keep our customers safe and our employees and our contractors. Key initiatives, some are already underway. Neighborhood policing in conjunction with the Police Transit Bureau, providing local police officers at local stations in conjunction with the group station managers who truly do understand and know their community and can work with the community on making everyone feel safe and being safe. With various other initiatives, such as a sevenfold increase in station CCTV, which I already mentioned. We'll also be introducing a confidential reporting line so that people can report safety issues. Employees with confidence will do that in conjunction with the union. Third key element, again, not an initiative, has to be in our DNA. It has to be in our psyche. That is of customer service and communication, a theme that is sprinkled throughout my plan. And sitting here today is our chief customer officer, a role that we deliberately introduced because it shows we're deadly serious about improving customer service. It is critical that we keep our customers informed during what will be a series of disruptive closures. So we are already taking steps to improve the way that we communicate with customers. I've talked about the group station manager concept that, again, will transform service on stations. Well, we're going to roll out a smart card. As I said, no more metro pass. We're bringing in a smart card such that we can also speed up boarding on the buses and that we'll have a state-of-the-art system. And then we're also going to introduce what I call a customer charter. A customer charter being a commitment to customers, a series of time-bound improvements where we will say in the next quarter, we will have the confidence to say we will deliver the following objectives, tangible objectives, and it's binary. We will either meet them or we won't, and I fully intend for us to meet them. So, what's next? As I hope you will agree, this is a very wide-ranging plan. People expected when I came here that it's going to be we're going to talk about increasing or improving our infrastructure, upgrading our infrastructure. People expected that. Of course it's about infrastructure, but it's about way more than that. Let's get the job done and do it properly. So I would like to, I hope that you think this is a bold plan. It's an imaginative plan and a wide-ranging plan. I'd like to thank my team, and a number of them are here today, Joe, Naomi, Tim, John, and Sarah. I'd like to thank my team for putting this plan together in less than 100 working days. People say they want action. If that's not action, I don't know what is. We have put this plan together in record time. Our next step. Thank you. Good job. Thank you. So our next steps include completion of the reorganization that's already got underway, delivery of improvements on a schedule that customers will see, including those quick wins, that customer charter, that refound confidence to actually say, we're going to do this and you can hold us to account, so that customers benefit from early improvements, progressive rollout of enabling process changes. So, of course, there's the elephant in the room, right? Cost. And I know you're all wondering about cost. So cost is under development. The actual cost of this plan is under development. And as the chair noted yesterday, Chair Lota, we do need to get this right. And I referred earlier to the fact that we don't have a stellar reputation in terms of delivering against our promises. So we're deliberately not exposing the cost. We have an idea what this will cost, but we want to get that right. We've learned a painful lesson that if you put up a cost before it's been properly thought through, you get held to that. And if it's more than that, which invariably it is, then that comes back to haunt you. So we really want to get into the granular detail of what will this cost, how can we bring this in for the cheapest possible amount. So we will now do that. We will now assign costs. But job one was to put the plan together. It was to produce the plan, to set out what needs to be done, how to do it, and the timescales. The plan is a roadmap that now initiates and informs the debate that has to happen. The debate on how to pay for it, and that debate is already underway. But to paraphrase an old song, got to get this right, you've got the brains, I've got the plan, now let's raise lots of money. So, in closing, I truly believe that we have a choice to make. I talk about a crossroads. We deliberately brought this plan forward to take New York to a crossroads. Are we serious about improving our transit? Or do we just want to stick at what we could do, which is, yeah, just make it a bit more reliable? Well, I'm absolutely nailing my colours to the mast of no. We need to proceed on beyond the status quo. That's not good enough for the world's greatest city. We need to provide you with a world-class transit system. It won't be easy to provide these upgrades, and particularly on such a compressed time frame in such a busy system, but we can do it. Not acting now is not an option, because at the end of the day, you still have to, if you put it off, you've still got to at some point bite the bullet and resignal that subway. You've still got to give those buses a fighting chance of getting through the traffic. And you still got to bite the ethical bullet of making our system accessible. And the more we procrastinate and the more we delay, the more expensive it will get and the more New York will slip behind. So I believe that this plan can be achieved. This is how we do it. Let's get on with it. Let's move ahead fast forward. Thank you.